So hey everybody, this is John Washam from Startup Next Door. Today I'm interviewing Dr. Lane Fontenot, the CEO of Medizzle, and Wade Seeking, the Chief Marketing Officer. Medizzle is a medically focused social network that connects doctors and patients and matches up users using a whiz-bang algorithm so they can find each other more easily and share experiences and questions about their medical conditions. Patients find each other by entering their illness and symptoms, and they are magically matched to each other, services and treatments that are perfectly matched for them. They can engage in discussions and enroll in webcast events online. The site is HIPAA compliant and keeps your sensitive information safe. Hi there, Lane and Wade.
Hi, how are you doing? It's good to be here.
And Wade's off mic.
He is at the moment, correct.
Your company is called Collaborative Health Solutions. So it's not really, Medizzle isn't the company name, it's Collaborative Health Solutions. So how did that company get started?
Well, let me answer a question that is kind of implied, and then I'll go into the history of how it got started. The name is Collaborative Health Solutions, with an emphasis on collaborative. So we're looking to create software, easy-to-use software that's very intuitive, that allows patients to collaborate with each other and patients to collaborate with their healthcare providers. Currently, there's not really anything out there in this space. There's things that help doctors. There's not much for patients, and there's really not anything for patients who want to get engaged in their medical discovery process with their doctor. So that's the name, and I think it's a really well-describing name for our company and what our mission statement is. So how did it get started? That's kind of an interesting story, and I'm going to give you the short version. I was working at a Fortune 500 company, managing a team using some kind of advanced analytics and ways to analyze big sets of data and find non-intuitive or non-obvious things in that data, and then create software so that others that weren't maybe as skilled or as trained or as knowledgeable could then also make those same discoveries on other data using the tools that we had built with the algorithms and the software. So during that time, I started to feel not well, and I started, of course, going to my local doctors, and I was diagnosed with probably like five different things, from insomnia to irritable bowel syndrome to, just various stuff. And, I asked him, hey, is any of this stuff related? And no one seemed to think it was related. I was getting bounced around from specialist to specialist, and they weren't talking. And, I realized, geez, no one even knows like what the gastroenterologist is doing. I need to relay that to this other doctor. And the other doctor said, well, that's not really my space. And so in the meantime, I got sicker and sicker. So, I was making good money then. And so I started to just go see the best doctors in the United States. And I traveled all over the place and still never got a diagnosis. And over this time, I got sicker and sicker and sicker. And this period went on for about 2.5 or 3 years, where I was just getting worse and worse and worse. And I had to cut my hours back to 20 hours a week. And then I finally had to quit work. And I was literally, unable to get out of bed, unable to do anything, and it was praying to die or to have a miracle and be healed. And obviously I'm here. So, that gave me a little bit of a different focus in my life, I guess you could say, once I started to improve. Regular work and just going to earn money didn't kind of ring hollow to me. So what I started to do was think about, how could I use my skills to help other people? Because, when I was really sick, that was what I had realized was the most important thing to me in my life, was how many people I had really made a difference in their lives. And it was a miserably small number at that time. It was a sad moment to realize that and to not know if I would ever get a chance to make a difference in my life in a bigger way. So, as I started to become capable, I started to think about, going back to medical school. I talked to a couple doctors, and they said, you'd be a great doctor, but you already have a PhD. What you might think about is using your skills to help us, because we're really shorthanded on you know, tools that help us. We're practicing medicine the same way we practiced, you know, literally 100 years ago. If you take away the technology, you know, the hardware, you know, essentially, like MRIs and some of that testing and the blood testing, not a lot's changed. You go into your doctor and they ask you what's wrong, and they ask you questions, and not much of that gets written down. And it's just not a very efficient process compared to what I was doing at my Fortune 500 job. So that was kind of an obvious thing. And it was also kind of a revelation that we were putting more time and energy into, you know, making physical, you know, commodities, you know, products for consumers to buy than we were to actually help people figure out what was wrong with them and help them stay well. Mm-hmm. So not knowing exactly what I needed to do, I started a company that was, you know, essentially you know, where I worked with doctors and I did consulting work, and I essentially found out what they needed. I did analysis with them, and I did that for about a year and a half or so. And then that led to, I knew what solutions were needed, and I knew what software needed to be developed. And then that's when I launched Collaborative Health Solutions.
Well, that's an interesting story. So this was really born out of a necessity that you saw that was needed to better really facilitate the communication between patients and physicians and help people get better diagnosis.
Yeah, it really was, you know, the product, if this the product that we're creating here had been created when I went through my, you know, medical experience, I would have probably, you know, been, you know, ill for a period of about 4 months, and three months of that would have been treatment. 1 month would have been figuring out what was going on and getting my right diagnosis. As it turned out, it took 3 years, and it took, I can't even tell you how many hours on the internet and scouring forums and groups, and, you know, you name it, I was there. I'm very persistent and diligent, and I'm a doer, not a quitter. And so it was born out of necessity. It wasn't born out of a need to want to go make money or to start my own company. It was born out of a simple fact that this solution is necessary and it's not there. So, you know, we're creating it.
So is Medizil the culmination of this, trying to create this product?
Right. Medizil is the first product from Collaborative Health Solutions, and it's an online suite of medical tools. The first part that we just launched here at TechCrunch in New York is a patient-to-patient social network, medical social network, and we can talk a little bit more about that. But that's the first offering from Collaborative Health Solutions. There's several products in the roadmap, but Medizil will be a pretty robust application. It is already, but I think users will be very, very pleased with the features and functionalities that are coming in future.
Okay, I got to ask where the name came from.
The name came from our chief operating officer. You know, we wanted something that was rememberable, something that was verbalizable. Like, did you medizzle it? in a short, you know, one word answer is, you know, what do you want your company or your medizzle site to be? I want to be the site that you tell people to go to when someone's having a medical problem. There is no such website right now that exists in the world. WebMD, you name it, you know, it just doesn't exist. People are still not getting what they need, clearly, because people say, go to Google it. I mean, they're getting, you know, what they need or part of what they need from Google for other things than medicine. But, you know, for medicine, no one really tells you to go to the internet, and that's unfortunate, and we're going to solve that problem.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you did, and it didn't help you.
Yeah.
It helped a little bit to kind of lead the way, but there were no arrows pointing to the diagnosis for you.
No, absolutely not. And it was a 3-year process, and, you know, literally I was at the end of my wits. You know, there wasn't much left in my emotional or you know, actual bank account. And you know, so that doesn't have to be that way. You know, we have the technology, we have the tools, we have the ability to create, you know, the applications and platforms that can help people connect with the right data. Just for some reason, no one has done it yet, so we're doing it.
I went through the site. I set up what you call a medical profile, and I have just testing it out because I don't really have any medical conditions unless you consider, I guess, what, myopia? It's like a nearsighted, farsighted in one eye.
Sure. I'd say that's one many people would be fine with living with.
But so I ended up putting in rabies. And then some form of cancer. And the things that pop up that I noticed, and this was also in one of your demo videos, was risk factors and now I can't remember the word.
Presentations.
Symptoms, basically. Yeah, symptoms.
Sure. The
layman, right? Symptoms and risk factors. And then they were tied to a medical condition.
That's right.
So it was very interesting. So I could because when I went through it, I had a different feeling of what it, maybe it would what's the end result. And to me, it was just collaboration with people to discover maybe things about support groups, discuss, you know, what's your experience you've had with this melanoma, or what's this you know, different things you can learn about the certain conditions you might have. But I can see now that after your explanation, it's basically taking those risk factors and those symptoms and trying to tie them into a larger picture of what you may have that you don't know about.
Yeah, you're on the right track. The site currently supports 750 illnesses, and then you need to know your illness at this point, and then you enter your illness, and then you choose what symptoms you have, and those symptoms can have different presentations. So that just means, you know, I sneeze or cough or whatever after I drink milk would be the, you know, the presentation. So it's just kind of how the symptom presents itself. Mm-hmm. And then there's also risk factors. And then, you know, what we do is we have a bunch of whiz-bang algorithms that are developed by a world-class, team that similar to what Google uses, but you know, slightly different and tweaked. So it's our own secret sauce. And that matches you up currently with other people or groups of people in the network, and ultimately also services or products as well that are matched to you and that other people that are like you are saying they're having a good experience with. So, you know, it does a little more than just allow you to connect with people. It's a little more robust than that, I think. There's also the ability for people to talk about what medications are working for them, and that's hard to find anywhere else on the internet, is someone that has your exact symptom set, and you can ask them, hey, what did this medication do for you? You know, it's hard to do, and in our platform, you can do that in a matter of, if you already have an account, it's literally a matter of probably 30 seconds to find those people and post the question, and they're sent an email that says log on to the site, there's a question, and you'll have your answer shortly. So it streamlines that. There's a lot of other tools coming that are on our roadmap that are actually that dwarf the current product. But the current, I don't want to take anything away from the current product. It's better than anything out there, and it's going to help a lot of people. So I guess what I'd emphasize is that much more exciting things are to come. But have people, check out the site, because I think they're going to find that there's a lot of tools and utility and usability there that they're going to not find anywhere else on the internet or otherwise.
So other than the social benefit, of course, to this business being to help people, you guys are self-funded. This is all from your team that is funding this effort. What's the business model of Medizzle?
Yeah, Medizzle actually has, there's quite a few different business models that are very capable. What we're focusing on now are what we call highly targeted ads, and the information is really so targeted that it's really not an advertisement anymore. It's information. It's kind of like the best analogy that I can come up with is, you buy some books from Amazon. The more books you buy, they say, hey, people who bought these books also bought these books or like these books. I've picked up some incredible reads. I actually scroll off the page to find that and click on those and put them in my basket or buy them. You compare that with your experience on any of the other social, sites such as Facebook, I just literally block out the right side of that page. I have no idea what's going on. You know, I really don't. And I mean, I'm not trying to bash Facebook. It just, for me, it may be different for other people, but I just don't look at that part of the page. It doesn't exist for me. So I think there's, you know, our obviously we are collecting data, and our site is set up in such a way that we have the ability to serve up people information and not just ads. And, you know, we won't serve an ad that we don't think a person wants to see. And that's much different than almost any other site. If you look at our homepage, we don't have any ads. That's usually the most valuable real estate on any website. Mm-hmm. For us, it's worthless because we're not trying to just blast you with garbage ads. We want to match you up with stuff that you actually are going to find useful, that are going to help you. You know, so we need you to come in and enter your information, and then, you know, once we know something about you, we have a shot at giving you some information that might help. If we don't, we might have information about you, but if we don't have anything to show you, we're not going to just show you a random ad. We won't show you anything. So that's one, is the highly targeted ads or information. And we're getting, we signed our first advertising client, and we're getting, you know, very phenomenal CPMs. And I think they're just going to go up from here as we start to show the data of the click-throughs and et cetera. We also offer some other services to care providers or clinics, where they can, you know, host events, which is a stream feed that's recorded, and they also own the advertising for that page. And what they can do is they can set up an event for a certain illness group or cluster, say diabetes with circulatory problems. Everyone in the system that says that they have diabetes with circulatory problems receives a notification that this doctor is going to be giving a, you know, seminar online. Here's what it's about. The person can, you know, watch it then, come back later and watch it recorded, et cetera. So it really extends the reach in a way that has never been done before to doctors in the medical community, to reach out to patients and specific demographics. And that's a very valuable thing for both patients and doctors. And obviously the advertising there is also very targeted. So those are just two. There's actually quite a few more, and I don't know if we really want to – you want to hear too much more about that. I think you're maybe more interested in, you know, some of the other questions you may have. I would be happy to go on if you'd like.
Yeah, if you could just kind of sum up briefly the rest of the points in your business model.
Yeah, another big one is Medizzle is focused on health, right? I mean, we're obviously a health company, but this concept is completely viable for almost anything in the world, and you know, anything that at least has hierarchical data that can be put into a relational database. So we've licensed a white label version of the tool to a company for a reoccurring licensing fee. So okay. As long as you have content experts that are willing to populate the database through our customized content management system, we run the algorithms, the optimization, and can reskin it for your site. And you really have a super-powered tool that you know, can actually be, you know, much more useful than a Google if you know, you have the content experts that want to build that site. I mean, one of the terms that you may be familiar with is garbage in, garbage out, right? So mm-hmm. Google does a terrific job of sifting through piles and piles of garbage to give you something that's fairly relevant. Well, this model is totally different. We say, hey, we're starting with all relevant data. It's all relevant. None of it's garbage. It's all relevant, and it's been created by content experts. You know, for us, it comes out of medical textbooks, entered by doctors and referenced. For other people, they're going to go through their procedure to validate that the data is accurate and referenced. So you start with, you know, really incredibly well-defined data, and then you build on that. So it's a different approach, and I think, you know, it definitely has the ability to really reshape a large portion of internet searches.
So when I was going around your site, the Medizzle site is definitely impressive. I mean, it's simple, it's clean, it's easy to navigate. I never found myself getting lost. So who did the design for the site, and are they on site working with you?
You know, that was a collaborative effort. I would say, you know, a portion, at least initially, a large portion came from me. And then we entered kind of the back and forth design process with my team engaging with the designers and the programmers. And we are a geographically dispersed team, both in the U.S. And our developing team is also, overseas. So we essentially are very, dispersed.
Okay. How large is the development team?
That varies on what part of the cycle we're in. It's between 18 and 28 dedicated heads.
Wow.
Depending on the time, yeah.
So where are you headquartered, other than the development team that's kind of offsite? Do you all work together, or do you work remotely?
Yeah, so we're headquartered in Austin, Texas, and that's where I moved to get this off the ground. Austin's a pretty strong hotbed of startups and entrepreneurial mm-hmm. talent. We definitely all work together, but we definitely are all not in the same location.
Okay.
So, and the trick to that is, you need to pick the right people. So we're everywhere from Nebraska, to Louisiana, to the East Coast. And obviously I'm in, there's a couple of people in Austin. So, and then we have our development team overseas. So, the decision point I had was, do I pick people that are local, or do I go out and I find the absolutely best people that I can find for this job, no matter where they live? And I chose to do the latter. And at this point we decided to bootstrap so we could retain, control. So that meant that everyone wasn't going to relocate and move to the same place. And actually, as it's turned out, things are going so well. We haven't really decided if we need to do that. So, but I think the key is you got to really pick the right people. You got to pick people that are all very competent on their own and don't need a lot of, day-to-day guidance. They need to be self-starters. They need to be, self-analyzers, and they need to be self-correctors. So, and they need to be like in the top 3% of the workforce, I think, if you're going to do this successfully, because you need to get stuff done, but you just got to trust that the people are going to know when to ask the right questions, when to touch base with each other. And they're going to be working on what they're supposed to be working on without you watching them. So it's not a simple thing to do, at all, but if you can find the right people, it's definitely, something that can be done.
Yeah. I have the same experience. So with my last job and then my current job at Stealth Startup, we work completely remotely. But you're right. You have to have the right team. You have to have people that don't need a lot of micromanagement and don't need a lot of supervision, and the people that are responsible enough to be able to get stuff done on their own and are technically competent enough that they don't need hand-holding.
Yeah, absolutely. So, there's not a lot of those people around.
That's good for me, though, right?
It is. I mean, if you're one of those people, it's great. Trying to find a group of six or seven of those people that all have to have certain skill sets was challenging. It took me a year. I didn't rush to fill every seat. Within a month or two, it took me over a year to do it. And in the meantime, I was still working, getting, the software, strategy in place and some of the development. But building the team, I think if you're not planning on just replacing those people once you start working or creating revenue and they have, a bigger role in the company, you better pick the right people right off the bat.
On a side note, how about, are there any tools you can recommend that have helped you collaborate with your team?
We use GoToMeeting fairly extensively. We use Skype fairly extensively. Those are the two big ones that we use. We've used some of the open source document sharing stuff on Google. But to be honest with you, a lot of our stuff is pretty pretty IP sensitive, so we kind of went away from the open source model with sharing stuff. It's kind of a weird thing when you're using Gmail and you're sharing confidential stuff and an ad pops up saying, do you need someone to write you a business plan? Click here. So, we just kind of decided, no matter, and I'm not saying anything about what Google's doing, I really don't know, but it just became obvious to us that we needed to go with a more secure solution for many things. But that said, there are tools, if you're not dealing with IP sensitive stuff, that you can use. You know, the OpenOffice suite's a good one that actually is, you know, client based that you can use. So, and there, obviously there's a lot of email stuff that's free that you can set up on your local client and then just get an account through a pretty cheap IP or ISP, and you're in good shape. And I think one other one we haven't utilized yet because we haven't needed it, but there's BizSpark, which Microsoft offers. I think their enterprise suite to any startup that's making less than $1 million a year, mm-hmm. For some period of time. So we haven't actually utilized that, but we'll probably think about it when we're in the space where we need to look at each other's calendars on a daily basis and stuff like that, because that gives you some benefits.
Okay. So I've got a little experience in working with a company, actually 2 years experience, working with a company that did online medical coding reference tools. So I mentioned mm-hmm. it in a post I did on Monday called A Business Lesson from Dune. Are you licensing any of this disease or illness information? So in the business, we called it ICD-9-CM. Or was this diagnostic?
Right, ICD-9.
What's that?
Yeah, ICD-9. I was just...
Or was this diagnostic, was it completely, you know, compiled in-house? Or was this something that you guys are licensing?
Actually, this was all compiled out of medical school textbooks.
Okay.
And from various textbooks and then referenced. So we didn't really want to stick with there's some variations in different textbooks, and part of our model is that the data will be refreshed as we go along. So, you know, we wanted to use different sources. So, yeah, it was all written in-house by MDs, checked by MDs, and cross-validated. So it's tough to get doctors to sit down and, type stuff into a computer. But that was part of the, you know, one of the hurdles we had to overcome.
Okay. I noticed as I went through the site, you were talking about ads before. There were a number of kind of placeholder ads, and I was wondering, you know, why am I seeing this placeholder, this ad for Medizil? I'm on Medizil. But yeah, that was basically a placeholder for other advertisements that you're going to show. And I've noticed that you could favorite certain ads. That was kind of a new thing. So, and it looks like about everything on the site you can favorite or in some kind of way. Do you see that favoriting of ads as an additional benefit for the advertiser, or is that something that you're going to basically use for?
First off, we have a patent pending on that ability to favorite ads. There's it's actually of added benefit to everyone involved. So, you know, everyone out there has probably gone to a site and they, you know, a flash ad comes up or an ad that's timed out, and you didn't have a chance to read it or click on it or whatever, and it's gone, and you hit back and you try to go to different pages and you never can find it, and you're like, oh, well, I'll leave. So what we added is the ability to favorite it, and it just moves it to your favorite page. You can favorite everything on the site, as you said. I'm really, really big on streamlining things and making things simple and easy to use. We're going to continue to work on the site and make additional improvements until it is just as easy to use as anyone could possibly imagine. So I hate going back and looking through things, including emails and, you know, et cetera. So we've added all the right tools so people can favorite users, they can favorite groups, they can favorite particular, you know, forum or group conversation threads, and then ads or products and services. So that's of use to any user if they want to come back and look, but it's also of use for us to be able to know what other users like you are favoriting and then what they're clicking through on, because that means you're probably going to be kind of interested in that. So it gives us a whole new way to target those products and services to you that, as far as I know, and we've been able to do research on this, that anyone else is doing. The other thing that this probably leads to, and I can't prove this yet, but my experience in data analysis leads me to believe that we're going to be able to statistically correlate the ads that are most favorited with the ad campaigns that do pretty well. And to our knowledge, this is one of the first, if not the first, leading indicator of how an ad campaign is doing online. So this is big stuff. So
an additional metric beyond, you know, clicks, you know, impressions versus clicks and that kind of thing.
Right. It's a totally new metric that I think you're going to start seeing. We're definitely going to see it on our site. All of our customers are going to use it, and we can start to show them what ad campaigns are working, which ones aren't, and then they can shut off the ones that aren't earlier, you know, saving everyone, including the users that aren't interested in the ads, you know, time and money. So this is all about, you know, this is obviously a lot of value add. There's a lot of money involved here, but this is everything we do is really driven from, hey, we want to optimize the user experience. And we feel that if we do that in an incredibly, you know, clever, and well thought out way, that you can, the money is naturally going to follow in a huge way. So we kind of turn it around and say, we want to create this in such an amazing way that everyone wins. And if that happens, you're going to make a lot of money. That's just a natural outcome of that. If people like the tool and they're very happy to use the tool on both ends, the advertiser and the advertisee, just looking at that revenue model, it's going to be a wild success. So that's kind of our approach. And, you know, it's kind of interesting that no one's thought of some of this stuff before, but, you know, we're glad of that actually. So it's kind of nice to break new ground with your team.
Yeah, I recently it's funny you mentioned Facebook ads, because I recently started running a campaign on Facebook ads. But Facebook, the interesting thing about Facebook ads that's kind of in parallel with what you're doing is that they have the ability to target ads with huge granularity, or with tiny granularity, I guess I should say. Like, I can say I want to target people who are 25 or older, who are into Korean dramas, and who have a college level education, and then boom, you know, that's only people that will see the ads. So in your case, where you're basically targeting, you're using medical history information somewhat anonymously to target ads. There's kind of a parallel there. Now, do you expect that there are going to be privacy concerns that someone might worry about when they're entering their medical information, knowing that there's, like you mentioned, Gmail and ads based on your email. This might be, you know, ads, because this would be ads targeted towards information in the medical history that you put in, or your conditions. Do you think people are going to worry about, you know, privacy concerns, and how are you dealing with these concerns?
Well, John, I hope they're really worried about privacy concerns. I mean, especially with this information. If they're not, I would urge them to reconsider that right away. There's probably no more important information. You know, you could argue maybe financial, et cetera, depending on your medical situation. But I think this is something that everyone should be very careful about. So the tool, I know I am, I know everyone on the team is, our CIO was the CIO and the Assistant Surgeon General at the Air Force. And so he, obviously working for the DOD, knows a bit about privacy and HIPAA compliance, et cetera. So everything on the site, as I think you mentioned before, is HIPAA compliant. Our servers are in a secure geographical cage with our EMR partner. You know, from that perspective, we are very, very, very secure. We're also running on an encrypted site as well. Beyond that, though, we don't even need to know your name. It's not that we're somewhat anonymously targeting ads at you. We are anonymously targeting ads at you. We don't need or want to know really who you are. We just need to know your condition so we can help you by matching you up with other people and targeting you with services that other people are finding useful for them. You know, other people like you are finding useful for them. Mm-hmm. So with that said, when you create, a profile on our site, the only information that we need from you is your username, which we urge you not to use anything that's close to your real name, and an email address, so, just so that we can validate that this isn't a bot trying to create an account. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, anything else that you enter, we can use for matching, which is helpful for you, but it's not necessary. So the user can decide. The other thing that is really, really important is by default, everything is locked down. It's by default, everything is locked down except for your username. Even your picture, if you upload a picture, an avatar, that's locked down. So the only thing that anyone will see if you create an account and don't change any settings is your username. Now, if you go in and you want to edit that, and it's a really simple process to do, you click on a lock. It's green and unlocked when it's viewable to the public, and it's red and locked when it's not. So you would have to make a conscious decision to go in there and open that up, save it, and then we have a really easy to use functionality that shows you what your profile looks like to the public. Now, to compare that to Facebook, I would challenge you or anyone that doesn't already know how to do it to go to Facebook right now and try to figure out in less than an hour on how to change their security settings. And I believe they're starting to get it and change this, but this is the big deal, and we're not trying to make it hard for people. We're trying to make it as easy as possible, and this is just another example, you know, of that. We're not trying to trick people or, you know, make it difficult for them to share on their data. In fact, the converse is true. We want to make it easy. We want to be very transparent because, you know, our platform is only useful if people trust us with their data, and that's why we go to all these, you know, extremes.
Yeah, I noticed that even your homepage, when you're not logged in, even the homepage is HTTPS. Everything's HTTPS.
Yes, the whole site.
Locked everything. Down.
Yeah, locked down as good as it gets.
Now, you mentioned in your intro video that you have a coming soon button at the very top, and you mentioned that you have a really exciting tool coming soon. So do you want to offer up any hints as to what that might be? A little teaser?
Well, let's say let's see, John.
No
let's
is say, an okay answer, too.
No, I'll give you a little something. You know, right now you need to know your illness, right,
mm-hmm.
first, and then you can select your symptoms. So let's just imagine if you didn't know your illness, right? Maybe, just maybe, there might be tools that can still help you. So right now, you need to know your illness to enter the system and get matched up. But quite possibly, if you don't know your illness yet, maybe there's a way that you can still receive help. So I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Very nice.
And it involves more whiz-bang algorithms than we currently have running on the site. It's an order of magnitude of about 10 to 20 times. So that's gonna be some exciting stuff. That's the stuff that really gets my blood pumping. You know, right now we've built a really nice framework. It's a super useful tool. I think it crushes anything out there that's, you know, in this space. But we're just getting started. That's my point is, you know, we have a vision that is it's a long road map, and we plan to change the world by helping one person at a time, and that's what we're about.
Well, with a business idea like this where you have a huge market of people that'll discover your site and, you know, tell their friends or tell people that they've meet in support groups or people that just anybody, are you worried about scaling at this point? What technologies are you using to kind of prepare for the coming traffic?
Yeah, what we've done is we've used, you know, we were kind of tempted. There's some new technologies out there. And we were kind of tempted to look at those. We did kind of look at them, but we decided to go with PHP and, you know, more standard technologies that we knew were tried and true. We've also, this is an enterprise level product. So we actually built, it was spent a fair amount of money building a product that was, it was more than a demo. It actually worked, but it wasn't scalable. So we decided not to launch that, even though we could have, and could have received funding at that time, but it wasn't scalable. So what we decided to do instead is to go back and make an enterprise-worthy product. And right now, that's what we have. All we need to do is add hardware in our cage, and it scales. So am I worried about scaling? Yeah, I think it's still a reasonable thing to be concerned about. I mean, you look at historically the biggest problems the most successful internet startups have are keeping up with scaling. There's always that problem. So it's something that we've brought in a third party. In fact, even at this time, there's a group that is an independent third party consulting firm that's going through a line by line code review to make sure that we're scalable, that there's no bandwidth or bottlenecks in there that are going to hurt us, because we do feel we will go viral. We've got the hooks, we've got the tool. You know, the more that people find out about it, I think the more people that are going to tell people about it and so forth. So, I wouldn't say I'm worried. It's on my top 10 concern list for sure, but we're doing everything we can to make sure that we're ready for that.
Sounds like it. As you've seen on Startup Next Door, I'm always trying to recommend free or low cost resources for people to use in their startups to save time and money and get their sites built faster. And because I'm cheap, but do you have any recommendations for the audience for some of the technologies that, like you already mentioned, PHP is free.
Sure.
Some other ones that kind of would help them, you know, build things faster, or even things that don't have anything to do with the web server, and maybe services that like open it up.
Sure. There's some pretty nice stuff. Screen capture stuff, if you're going through mockups, there's a program called Print Screen that's free, and you can actually not just print the whole screen, but you can use your mouse to select what part of the screen, so that's handy. There's a program called Jing that gives you 5 minutes of recording time, so you can essentially record your screen with your mouse, and you can have your voiceover on that,
Is that J-I-N-G?
J-I-N-G, correct. You only get, I believe, 5 minutes for free, it's a pretty useful, especially if you're going through, you know, a site and trying to show bugs or trying to show, you know, something that has a time flow to it. Mm-hmm. It's pretty hard to do that with screen captures without spending a lot of time. So you can just put that on and record your voice over what you're trying to say and then send that off to your developer. I think we've talked about, obviously Skype. And the other communications. I'm trying to think. There's the developer stuff. Mantis bug tracking is free. There's some other things that I haven't been that involved with that I know haven't cost a lot of money. But one thing I will say for your audience is Wade and I were actually discussing this tonight over dinner as TechCrunch ended, and we started out, you know, when you have an idea and you think you want to maybe go entrepreneurial, you buy books, right? That's the first thing you do. And then you go on the internet and you read about it and everything. And everyone says, you know, create a business plan, and then you got to create this big business plan, do all this research, and then you go try to get money. And our experience was, well, we did that. And then we went to go get money. And they said, wow, that's a great idea, but you need to make a demo. So we said, okay, well, we'll do that. So we went and did a demo, and they said, okay, it's a great idea, but you need to make a beta product, not just a demo. And we did that. And then they said, we came back. They said, okay, the demo's looking great, but if you actually had a working product, that would be better. And we said, okay. And it was about that time that I realized, you know, if we're going to make this happen and we're going to keep control or even have a reasonable valuation, we're going to actually have to create this thing on our own. Now, I guess my point isn't that, it's a miserable process or anything. It's actually worked out really well for us. We were kind of laughing because, you know, even through all the ups and downs, we have full control of our company right now. We have a product that's enterprise level that's out there. We were at TechCrunch. We have users registering right now. There's a lot of VC interest right now. So we're in a really good position. If we would have got that early money, I don't think we'd still have control. I think we'd have been diluted out of my point here is that a business plan is worthwhile to the point where you get the data you need for yourself. Once you do your market research and it's a good process to put it all down in words and to think about it, because you're going to come up with a lot of questions that you didn't have before, and you're going to want to answer those for yourself. But when it comes down to, okay, now I'm going to start like wordsmithing this thing, and you can wordsmith a business plan for months, believe me. That's probably not value added unless you've already been an entrepreneur and successfully brought a company to fruition, either through acquisition or IPO, and you have an investor that you know or some other relationship. If it doesn't matter. I had a team of PhDs and MDs and MPHs and, you know, the works, all Fortune 500, big names, big, you know, but feedback to us was, well, this is your first time at the rodeo, so, you know, we want to see you do something before we're going to put money in. So, looking back, I would have probably scratched about 3 months on the business plan and just got to work on figuring out how I was going to make what I needed to make. Mm-hmm. And when we made that decision, forget the business. I haven't pulled out the business plan in a year, at least. It's not part of what I need to do. It's not part of it. So, I think, you know, like I said, it could be different for different people, different markets, but I think if people – my impression by reading the books was all make a business plan. This is how it needs to look. Here's the format. Here's what they expect to see. Here's the tables and the financials and blah, 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 blah. And then if you expect to walk in there, you know, to an investor kind of unknown and just show them a business plan and expect to get, you know, a reasonable chunk of money without a previous track record of doing this kind of stuff, it's a tough deal. So my advice would be to figure out a way to get it done to at least some degree, and then worry about the business plan in detail if you need to. I'm not saying don't do a business plan unless it's you're very, very familiar with your market, but I'm saying, you know, fine-tuning it and, you know, spending a lot of extra time on it, I'd kind of urge people to think twice about that.
All right. So as you mentioned, you're officially like launching this week at even though the site's been out for about a week, you're launching this week at TechCrunch Disrupt in New York. Did you do your presentation today or yesterday?
We were in the alley yesterday. The way it works is we had a full day in the alley, and so people kind of come around and look at your technology and ask questions. So there's, you know, I think there was like a 250 different press and 150 different investor groups that were there. And then just a lot of different people that were just kind of, you know, interested in new technologies, et cetera. It was a really interesting experience. I mean, TechCrunch for us this year, this isn't really our ideal launch event. You know, this is, you know, historically been more of a, you know, just a different type of event than a medical event. And, you know, we knew that going in, and we needed to launch, and we wanted to do an event. The timing was really good, and it's a very reputable event. And we were chosen out of, you know, hundreds and hundreds of applicants to be there. So, it was a great experience. We made some great contacts. There was a lot of interest, even though, you know, the people that were there that were in the health space were very, very interested, and we have meetings planned with them for the upcoming week, et cetera. And we made some other good contacts with some marketing people and some other stuff. So I would say overall, it was a really good experience. You know, it was very fast paced and hectic. I mean, there was a lot of entrepreneurial energy in there. And it was fun to be part of it. There's a lot of innovation going on. It was fun to be here.
All right. Well, I appreciate you guys taking the time. I know you've been busy. You're tired. You've been doing Disrupt all, you know, since late Sunday night. You had to go in and set up and everything. But so, you know, 3.5 days probably. So I appreciate it. And a little shout out to Wade there. He's been off mic this whole time, but he's been with us in spirit.
Yeah. He's sitting here and smiling. So, and also I want to thank you for the Twitter post. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Yeah, we're counting on you know, word of mouth. We have a pretty robust plan on how we're gonna get things out on a limited budget, but we're really counting on people seeing the passion and the utility behind the tool and seeing that it's being done for the right reasons to help get the word out. And you know, if we do take on an investor, that will definitely some of that money be allocated for that. But for now, you know, we really like the idea of where we're at, and we want to really see where the site can go over the next, you know, couple weeks or month. And we're really hoping that the word can spread quickly.
Well, I wish you all the best. And
well, thanks, John.
I'm going to sign off. So thanks again, guys.
Okay.
And great interview. And good luck. Knock 'em dead.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.